Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil. We are going to go over the Summer League roster because among all the scuttle of free agency and all the news and the craziness, basketball in one shape or form is going to be played here pretty soon. But before we get to that, we got to at least mention the fact that the Heat will get the first meeting with Gordon Hayward. They're going to meet with Hayward on Saturday. It'll be the first of several meetings Hayward's going to have. Already has a meeting with the Jazz on the books, expected to meet with the Boston Celtics as well. And that's really the final trio. Is this a good thing or a bad thing, David, that the Heat are getting the first meeting?
Well, I think it's good in some ways. It might be bad in others. I know that sounds kind of vague, but at the very least, it legitimizes the fact that Miami is seriously a top contender for his services. You know, we've talked about it. We speculated. There's been hints that he's interested. I don't know if those were I don't think he's ever come out publicly, nor would he. I imagine his agent through some back channels probably communicated to the Heat that there's mutual interest there. And of course, there would be interest on Miami's part. But as far as the meeting time is concerned, having that first meeting, I think a lot of people have discussed it and it seems to make a lot of sense. It probably benefits Miami more than anything else. They can talk to him, make a great first impression, as they often do, and gauge his interest levels right away. They can tell whether or not this is a serious pursuit here on Hayward's part, whether or not he really does seem to identify with the culture, whether or not he thinks it's a great place for him and his family. And if so, they'll probably put the rest of their plans on hold until they finalize something with him or until something gets finalized one way or the other. Whether he decides to move on somewhere else, he doesn't strike me as the type of guy who's somewhat flaky. Like, look, for everything that we knew about last summer's free agency, and Kevin Durant meeting with six different teams and everything else, He met with all those teams. But at the same time, it's been reported by more than one person that he kind of tends to fly by the seat of his pants. He's known to be somewhat whimsical, even when it's making major decisions like this. And look, if we understand these other reports that have come out since then, Draymond Green was recruiting him as early as at the end of the finals last year. Right. So it was a process that had taken place for some time. He met with everybody, but there was a good chance that he knew in the back of his mind where he was going
to
go.
That seems to be the same case with the report, right?
Right.
Or at least about Durant. Miami didn't get the first meeting with Kevin Durant. Maybe that's completely irrelevant to this. Durant's a different person, obviously. He may have had his, like you're saying, he might have had his mind made up already and just wanted to hear out what these other teams had to say, gather some intel, etc. I don't believe in 2010 that the Heat had the first meeting with LeBron, or I think they did have the first meeting with LeBron. I can't remember, but I remember LeBron James was staying in a hotel and a bunch of teams would, and I went back and tried to find the ESPN article. Yeah, they came and flew in, and I remember that the Heat were the first ones at the hotel, and I went back and found the ESPN article about it, and it was specifically like the Heat showed up like 45 minutes early. LeBron showed up like 20 minutes early for the scheduled meeting, so the Heat were already there. And they had the meeting. So if LeBron is showing up at that point, I guess that must have been the first meeting, because then the Clippers met, and that was when Neil Olshey, who's now the Portland GM, he was the GM of the Clippers. Neil Olshey like passed Pat Riley because the Heat actually went over their allotted time in the pitch, which ultimately and obviously worked. So they had one of the first meetings with LeBron.
Right.
They didn't have the first meeting with Durant. They're going to have the first meeting with Gordon Hayward. Now, I think I'm really reaching here to find a pattern.
I think so.
Right. But it's worth bringing up, I guess. Or maybe it's not, and I'm completely insane. I don't know.
I mean, we're looking for nuggets. We're not going to find anything. And
I mean, we're
no
looking
double.
At we're looking at Gordon Hayward's wife's Instagram account for nuggets now, and she does seem to really like the beach.
She does. Yeah, her and her kids both love spending time on the beach. There are no beaches in Utah, and you don't want to go to beaches in Boston. That's for sure.
Oh, no.
But she also apparently posted an Instagram, grant post or whatever, showing letters of kids from Salt Lake City saying, "Gordon Hayward, we love you. Please don't leave," or something like that. So she's all over the place. And I don't know if maybe she's just a 20-something-year-old having fun and kind of just, you know, using social media the way it's supposed to, not with much, you know, significance to it. But yeah, here we are in 2017 looking at tweets the same way we were in 2014, wondering whether or not, you know, LeBron's cars being moved out of his garage were significant. Of course, it turns out they were. Flight patterns from Cleveland.
Right. I wouldn't have believed any of this stuff. When it was happening in 2014 with LeBron, I just basically ignored all of it. Like, I didn't write about it. I didn't talk about it. I was like, this is ridiculous. Sure. Like, we're trying to track planes with sonars and crazy stuff. But all of it actually did sort of
Panned out. But I don't know if it's just kind of like a retroactive in the sense that, you know, all of a sudden all the pieces fit into place. But I remember hearing people saying that LeBron James's personal website has a graphic designer that specifically asked about the color scheme of Cleveland teal or Cleveland gold and wine or whatever.
Right.
And he's going to incorporate that color scheme into his website. And everybody's thinking, oh, my God, this is it. He's going back to Cleveland. Sure enough, it did turn out. I don't think that change was even made to the website. But, yeah, of course, he wound up signing in Cleveland anyway. But anyway, we don't want to bring up 2014. This is all about the future. Hayward's is still undecided, but it seems like Miami's at least positions themselves well to make an early, immediate impact. And again, if for nothing else, they'll be able to meet with him, figure out, yes, this is legitimate. He really does want to come here, or we're definitely within the top two or three, you know, obviously not just meeting with us, but he's seriously interested in joining Miami. And if not, then move on to plan B, which entails probably Rudy Gay, perhaps Danilo Gallinari, and certainly Deion Waiters and James Johnson.
That's right, and there was a report earlier, and I can't remember who tweeted it, but that Rudy Gay could be, like, now that he opted out, but he's recovering from that Achilles injury, he could be had at somewhere near the mid-level exception of something like 4 to 5 million. If that's the case, whether or not Miami gets him at their MLE or not, that makes him extremely gettable. So if his market value is already there, because we were hoping that Rudy Gay, if he were the plan B or C or D, whatever he was, and ended up in Miami, that they would end up getting a discount, because all the rumors for 3 years now, it seems like, has been Rudy Gay wants to go to Miami.
Interested, yeah.
Like, that 4 to 5 million price range is really, that fits right where you want it to be. If the Heat can't get Hayward, that $5 million mark means that they might be able to keep James Johnson, Deion Waiters, and sign Rudy Gay, but we've got plenty of time to talk about. You mentioned
he's taking meetings in Texas, Austin, if I'm not mistaken, right?
He is?
I believe he is.
I'm going to be in Austin next week. Should I pay him a visit? Or
absolutely. Was it in Oklahoma? I think you should make a pitch. Oh, maybe it is. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. I don't know. Sorry. I was trying to put you on the scene there and hope that you could scoop everybody on the news, but I guess that won't happen.
I mean, look, I promise when I'm drinking in Austin and looking and trying to compare one barbecue place to another, I will keep an eye out for Rudy Gay, just in case.
Is that what you'll do in Austin? I've never been, but I don't know.
So
is
there's
that
supposed to be a great local music scene. So we're staying on Lake Travis.
Okay.
And listeners, if you have any suggestions of places I should be going, please email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or hit me up on Twitter. But the plan, we've got like a little timeshare thing on Lake Travis or near Lake Travis. So we're going to spend a lot of time at the lake, like stand up paddle boarding and doing all that fun stuff.
Hey,
and then,
sorry to interrupt real quick. According to Wojnarowski, free agent Rudy Gay hosts meeting in Austin, Texas with interested suitors this weekend. Wes, you're plugged in. You are basically
going
for the Miami Heat.
I think my girlfriend will really be understanding of the fact, like, babe, I'd love to go stand up paddle boarding with you on the lake, but I got to go figure out where Rudy Gay is. And she's going to be like, who? who is this person?
You mean all-star Olympian Rudy Gay? You don't know who he is? Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right.
You're listening to Love Advice with Leanne. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Leanne. Longtime listener, first-time caller. Why, in your professional opinion, do you never take my calls off the air?
Is this Carl?
Yep, it's Carl. I mean, we had a few dates. Everything was great, I thought.
Well, you know, when you switch to GEICO, you could save a lot of money on car insurance.
Okay, awesome.
You should call them.
I will.
GEICO, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Let's move on to the Summer League stuff.
Absolutely.
So the Heat have put together their Summer League roster. They're going to be playing in Orlando and Las Vegas. It's basically the same roster. There's one player that's different, but it's essentially the same roster. They're going to be coached by Chris Quinn this year, which is a new little wrinkle, but that's exciting for Chris Quinn. But what David and I are going to do, we're going to go through the roster, kind of just break down what to expect from these kind of players, and who could be this year's Rodney Magruder or Carol White, who ends up just making the roster as a surprise player. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, you and I were there last year. Mm-hmm. I think both of us came enamored with Briante Weber and his mm-hmm. consistent effort. Magruder looked like he was still pretty raw, but again, a lot of hustle, a lot of the kind of grit and grind that Miami loves so much. And he came away earning himself a roster spot there based on those performances and, of course, what would, you know, later take place during training camp. But, you know, this is an opportunity for a lot of guys. Either they're longtime journeymen, undrafted free agents, or even a guy like Bam Adebayo who will be on the Summer League team. You know, guys looking for an opportunity to prove themselves, you know, make a positive impression, learn things real quickly. I mean, Udonis Haslam talked about a piece that came out for Heat.com today about what training camp meant to him, what Summer League meant to him, and how he was basically abusing everybody out there because he knew he had to fight and claw his way for a spot. And, you know, 14 years later, clearly he's made himself a pretty great career out of that one, you know, particular showing. But this is a really great opportunity there. I mean, look, a lot of people will disregard what happens in the Summer League because it's not exactly the sexiest. Free agency is taking place, and there's a lot bigger names out there. But there's going to be at least one or two players here that is going to make an impact and possibly, you know, parlay that into a free or a free agent spot with Miami and maybe get a roster spot there. So, you know, it's a great opportunity for fans to really see some players who might be on their way up.
Right, and if the Heat do get Gordon Hayward, they're gonna have to sign him to a max contract. Or if they sign Blake Griffin to him, if they sign somebody to a max deal,
there's not gonna be much room.
There's not gonna be a lot of cap room, right? So might end up getting some of these guys to fill out the roster. So the Summer League is very important for Miami, and a big difference between last year's summer and this year's team is that last year's team had a bunch of relatively veterans on that squad. I mean, that was a team that had Justice Winslow, top 10 pick, Josh Richardson, who had a great rookie year, Rodney Magruder, who had spent time with the Boston Celtics, Briante Weber, who was on the Miami Heat's playoff team. That was an old, compared to the other Summer League teams, that was an old, experienced roster that ended up performing very well during Summer League. This year's team is the opposite of that. Everybody except one player is a rookie, and the one player who's not is Okero White, who's played in 35 games last year for the Heat. So isn't experienced by any means, only played a few minutes off the bench at any given time. Of course, there's Bam Adebayo, who's a lottery pick, but he's never played an NBA game, obviously. And everybody else is basically just unproven rookies, undrafted rookies, guys from overseas. So one of these guys, all these guys will have an opportunity to show off in front of Miami's coaches and front office and maybe parlay that into a roster spot. So let's get into it. The first guy, obviously, is Bam Adebayo. We don't really have to cover too much because all we've talked about in the last several podcasts has been Bam, but he is going to be the star of Miami's Summer League team. And if we already know what he can do, he can roll to the rim, he's super athletic, all these things that made him the 14th pick. What people really want to see is, okay, is he hitting 15-footers, 17-footers? Is he shooting threes? What does his perimeter shot look like? And then even on the other side of the floor on defense, is he moving his feet well? Is he switching on to perimeter players? And all this other stuff that the Heat are going to probably ask of him, maybe not early on in his career, but eventually. That's where people should be watching for Bam, right?
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, I love the fact that Quinny is going to be head coach there, but they are also bringing back, I'm drawing a blank now, last year's coach.
Quinn? Oh, no, that's coach now. Dan
Juwan Craig. Howard.
Oh, Juwan Howard.
Yeah, Juwan Howard's coming in. Wow, I'm sorry, totally blanked there. Juwan Howard's going to be in there as assistant. So you've got Quinn, showing him how to, you know, handle the ball. They're going to be probably running pick and roll situation. Then you got Juwan, the big man, who's going to be able to teach a lot of things to Adebayo there. So I'm excited to see how he kind of takes these lessons there, how he's able to kind of pick up things right away. I wonder how much they're going to make him the focus. I think even last year when they had a relatively star-laden team there with Justice, he was the focal point, but only to a certain extent. You know, obviously you and I saw him kind of running the offense a lot, being asked to be the playmaker. A lot of that had to do with the fact that, well, Dwayne Wade, you know, recently signed with Chicago. So they kind of had to see what they were getting out of Justice. So I think they kind of put him through those early paces there. But I wonder if that's what's going to be with Adebayo. But I'm curious to see if he's going to be asked to hit the shot from outside, if he's not, if he's going to be posting up down low. You know, if he's able to show some of that versatility that we've only heard about or seen glimpses of since his career in Kentucky.
I think if we know this Heat organization, and I think we do, they're going to make sure that he's got the fundamentals down first. They're probably going to use him like they used Whiteside and Willie Reed last year. Defensively, they'll ask him to switch sometimes, but not all the time. They're not going to ask him to go beat Draymond Green out there immediately, right? They're going to say, like, look, if it's these certain actions, make sure you're switching. Make sure you're at least hedging or showing a little bit. But ultimately, protect the rim. And we're going to let these guys, we're going to let your perimeter defenders funnel guys to you at the rim. And on offense, depending on who the lead point guard is, because it could be a couple of these guys running pick and rolls, rolling to the rim, maybe some pick and pop stuff. Not asking them to be Kristaps Porzingis or Towns from three-point range, but maybe asking them to be Udonis Haslem from 10 to 15 feet. You know, more reasonable stuff. The other guy there is Okero White, who I'm actually really interested in watching. We saw Okero White last year. I really liked Okero White towards the end of the year. And I think he has potential as a small ball five and a stretch four for this team, depending if he can get a more consistent perimeter jumper. He's going to be asked to take a leadership role on this team because he's the only guy on this whole summer league roster who's spent any time with the Heat so far. He knows the culture. He gets it. He's been in the locker room. He knows what it takes at this point to be a part of that locker room. He knows what it takes to be in these guys' shoes and work their way and stay patient and work their way up from summer league to Sioux Falls to the Heat roster to getting a partially guaranteed contract like he does now. Yeah. He's going to be asked to take a leadership role. And also, unlike last summer, I think he's going to be able to show a little bit more versatility. I think we'll see him put the ball on the floor a little bit more, shoot some more threes, be a more perimeter-oriented defender maybe. I'm excited to see what Okero White can show in his second year.
Yeah, likewise. I mean, I was curious because early on we saw reports that Rodney Magruder was actually part of the summer league roster. Turns out that those were debunked. I don't know if those were just early reports.
Yeah, I think he was practicing with them, but he's not going to actually be on the summer league team, right?
And nor does he actually need to. I think it's not to say that he's a finished product by any stretch, but I think he's graduated to the bigs, I think. And I think he's ready to show what he can do at a more consistent level at the NBA, not necessarily trying to carve a spot out for himself there. That's still something that a guy like Okoro needs to do. He came in there, provided a nice change of pace, particularly during that 13-game win streak. And I think he did show the versatility that you hinted at. I'm hoping that he put on a little bit more weight. He was kind of lanky, and you don't want to bulk him down, but I think you still need him to have a little bit more heft, a little more strength to be able to guard some of the bigger front court players. He's got the speed. He's got the hops. His ball handling is a little suspect, so if he's going to do things off the dribble, you want to see if that's taken a step for the improvement. And I think the outside shooting that he showed late in the season, you want to see if that's just a flash in the pan, whether or not it's something that he can do somewhat consistently. So, again, that's a big thing to look out for. So I am excited to see Okoro there.
Yeah, and look, you hit on a really good point about Magruder. He's got a spot on the roster. He's making that Heat team. The only reason he's not on the Heat is if he gets lumped into some weird trade package. But he's on Okoro White. His contract is partially guaranteed but not fully. Right. And he's kind of like this year's Briante Weber. Okay, he's got the lead. He's for a roster spot here, but it's not guaranteed, and you can't take that for granted. And the Heat want to see, all right, what else do you have? Because if you want to make this roster, you've got a bunch of other guys also fighting for that spot. We just drafted another big man. We don't know what we're doing in free agency quite yet. You got to make sure that you're showing some improvement. There's a few big men that are actually pretty interesting. Let's start with them. There's Zach Auguste.
I think it's Auguste, actually, because he's of Creole Haitian background.
Oh, is he?
So he's Zach Auguste. He played in Notre Dame, 4-year player right there, 6'10", 240 pounds. So certainly, he's got the size and the heft. He was undrafted in 2016, from what I saw.
Right.
He signed a contract with the Lakers, but he was waived before at the end of training camp, so he never got a chance to play at the big. So he does have somewhat minor NBA experience. He also played professionally in Turkey,
right.
So he does have some idea of what to do at the professional level. I'm sure it'll be a big change for him to go from, that somewhat dysfunctional summer league last year in LA to something a lot more rigid in Miami. So how he makes that transition is great. I saw some footage of him. Nothing that really leaps out at me. He's not explosive, not an elite athlete. I think he was kind of slow every time he ran to the rim or anything like that. He didn't really explode as a leaper either. He's got the size, so they're probably going to be able to utilize him that way. But I'm curious to see whether or not he's got an extra step that he can show at some league. Because if not, he's probably just not a guy who can actually carve out a spot in the NBA.
Yeah, he's him and the Ole Miss guy, Sebastian Saez.
Yes, he has, yeah.
Those are my two early picks to be the Stankovic of the summer.
Yeah, the guys that they hype up needlessly. I mean, Saez is another guy. He's a 4-year player at Ole Miss. You wrote about it earlier today at All You Can Heat about he was a 28% shooter from 3-point range. Not exactly great numbers. He does have some nice size there, 6'8" with a 7'5" wingspan. I just didn't see anything in his game that I think will translate to a big level.
He's a good rebounder. Averaged 11.4 rebounds a game. Like, the thing that stands out to me with Saez, a little bit better than 74% from the free throw line, and he only made like 29% of his 3-pointers.
Right.
But he took 2 3-pointers a game in his last season at Ole Miss. So there was something there where the coaches were saying, go ahead and take these. We think you can make them. He didn't. But
about Ole Miss than it does about size.
So. Maybe, right? But like, that's why he's my early pick to be the Stefan Jankovic of the summer, is because if he hits 2 or 3 of these, everybody's going to go crazy and say he should be a stretch 4 on the Heat's roster. And then Auguste also, he's got good footwork from what I was reading about him. He's a good post scorer. He can put up points in the post, but that's such an outdated skill in today's NBA. He's going to struggle defensively. But those guys, they have the size. They have, like, Saez's size is like, he's incredibly long. Like, they're going to look like guys who should be on an NBA roster, even if they don't have the complete skill set that they need to have. Any other bigs? There's Eric Mika.
He's actually an interesting one. He's 6'10", right? Yep. Kind of burly guy.
6'10", 230.
He's an interesting prospect in the sense that he only played 2 years at BYU, but he's already a little bit older. But the reason why he cut short his eligibility was because he spent 2 years as a Mormon mission in Rome. And Italy there. So he spent, the first 2 years of his potential athletic career in elsewhere for his religious mission. And he came back, showed promise, really put himself through a rigorous training process. And he kind of made the most of his 2 years there. So despite the fact that he could have played 2 more years, he thought now's the time to try this. And he decided to make the leap there. A lot of guys, I saw some scouting reports saying that he had a lot of, he had great work ethic, a nice stroke there. Not exactly the kind of guy who will shoot from the perimeter, but he can shoot from the mid-range, and he'll outwork everybody. So he's another one of those bigs in the summer league. I think you'll see him, kind of throw an elbow here and there, try to get physical with everybody. He said that he first grew up playing lacrosse because he loved the physicality of it and being able to body check guys on the field and stuff like that. So he certainly brings an added dimension there. Not what you'd expect from most Mormon missions when you think of Sean Bradley a couple of years ago. He was not a guy who was known for his physicality. He was just known for being a 7'5", string bean out there.
I like Mika. Is interesting. Is it Mike? You think it's Micah?
Mika, I don't know. Whatever. Mika, who cares?
20 points a game, 9.2 rebounds, 1.9 blocks. I think he's going to – I could see this guy playing center in summer league.
Yeah.
Maybe behind Bam.
The bench, yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah, come off the bench.
along with Norval Pell, who we'll talk about him in a second too. But look, I just he of all these guys that we've talked about, he's not the most skilled. I think that's probably Saez, maybe by a small margin, or Augusti, maybe. But he kind of sounds, from all the things we've read, like I'm not gonna get on here and pretend that I've ever watched a lick of BYU basketball, but from everything I've read, he seems like the most Heat kind of guy. If he's got that mid-range shot, like you said, if he's just a hard worker, supposedly, he's kind of like all this stuff. He's the Mormon mission, I guess, is like a nice character trait, blah, blah, blah. But all sure. that, I've got two words for Miami fans. John Beck. If we remember the Dolphins drafting the last that BYU quarterback who also went on a Mormon mission, and before the draft, it was, oh, what a great character thing. Like, he's a little older, but don't let that sway you. I'm not comparing Micah to John Beck and the complete catastrophe and failure that John Beck became.
Yes.
But I am comparing them.
He kind of reminded me, actually, of Michael Doliak. Remember him? He played at Utah also. He was a Utah Ute for Rick Majerus, but same Utah size, people. Same kind of mid-range game. So
I need you to care about basketball, not helping the world or anything. Norval Pell's the other guy. He's the only other player, other than O'Kara White, who actually played on last year's summer league team.
Yeah.
That's on this year's summer team. He's 24, 6'11". Last year, he averaged 2 points, 3.5 rebounds, and 9.4 minutes in two summer league games. So he didn't play a whole lot. Miami, though, was trying out a lot of different centers and a lot of different bigs last year. But they do have just as many bigs this year.
So he's an interesting guy. I was trying to do a little research on him too. He went undrafted in 2014, so he's been out of it for a little while there. Never played at the college level. He's still just 24, and he did spend some time in the G League, or at that point the D League, with the Delaware 87ers. Mm-hmm. So what I saw was some nice athletic ability there. He's got the length for sure. A lot of shot-blocking ability, and I think that's what his forte was when he was in the G League there, but he still seems, based on what you know, he spent some time also in Europe last year, so I think he's played a little bit. He's just trying to get his foot in the door. It doesn't seem more likely at this point. He's still very unpolished from what I saw. Now, again, I'm not an expert or a professional scout or anything like this, but from what I saw, he still looks very much like an unfinished product, and unfortunately, I don't know, you know, with Adebayo getting the majority of minutes as a big and other guys that probably show a little bit more promise or upside, I'm wondering how much Norvell will actually play there, but it'll be interesting. He adds another dimension of physicality, I guess.
Let's move on. Those are all the bigs. We can move on to some of the wings here. And that's I think this is where it gets most interesting, because Miami, we know they like wings. We know that they like the Ronnie Magruder types. You know, they know that if they're going to get somebody off of the summer league squad, they're not going to be the most skilled player, but they could still make the roster, they could still make impact and make those quote-unquote winning plays that Spoelstra loves so much.
Right.
So that's, I guess, and that seems to be the trend with the guys that they have put on the summer league team. I mean, there were undrafted free agents who were highly skilled that the Heat don't seem to have bothered with very much. Right. They were kind of looking for these 3 and 4 year players from small colleges who had the ball in their hands, were somewhat productive in some cases. In other cases, they were looking for 4 year players who were in bigger schools and unit programs, sure. and trying to find guys who maybe had the leadership potential. And that guy who I'm talking about is Zach Irvin, who's really interesting to me. He was a 4 year player out of Michigan, and if you watched Michigan or the NCAA tournament, you saw Zach Irvin play. He averaged over 30 minutes a game for them, 13 points. 4.5 rebounds, 3 assists, and 0.9 steals per game. 6'6", 215 pounds. Does a lot of things well, but doesn't do anything great.
Right.
But, I mean, does that sound like Rodney Magruder or what?
It does. I think he's even a little taller, which is great. He's certainly a wing player. I mean, he's got a nice shooting percentage, as you pointed out, but he's got a funky stroke, too. Not
really
quite
weird.
Not quite like Lonzo Ball. But not too different either. He kind of brings it up from the left side and pulls it up over his head like that.
Yeah, a little bit really more in front of his. Like Lonzo will he releases it off the side from the side of his head, and it seems like Irvin kind of releases it right in front of his face a little bit more.
Right. Yeah. I saw I mean, he tied the school record for most games played for Michigan Wolverine. That's impressive considering all the guys they've had on there, you know, the quality level of play they've had. He also attended high school with Gary Harris of the Denver Nuggets. So okay. He has at least a little experience and a knowledge of what it takes to carve out a place there in the NBA. So you wonder if he's going to be able to take it to the next level. Hopefully, you know, again, I'll never forget when I talked to Norman Powell of the Toronto Raptors last year, and he told me flat out the reason why he went so late in the draft a couple seasons ago was because he was there in the league college for 4 years at UCLA. I mean, it kind of waters down your stock a little bit. People think either if you had enough upside, you would have gone earlier in your career. You wouldn't have had to stay there for 4 years. I mean, look at our own Josh Richardson. He's a guy that might not have gone drafted, but Miami tends to gravitate towards those players with that kind of experience. And Urban, I think, seems to fit right along that.
Another guy was Jean Clavel.
Jean Clavel.
Oh, jeez.
It's all right. He's a Puerto Rican native who actually represents the 305 down at Hialeah Gardens. He attended Hialeah Gardens, led them to a state title, and then went on to play at Colorado State.
Mountain West Player of the Year?
Yeah, impressive there. You know, averaged 20.4 points, 38.6% shooting on 7.5 three-point attempt per game. You know, not a bad outside shooter. You know, he's 24 years old also. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to see if he's got another level there. He's got the hunger. He's a local boy, so I'm sure it probably means a lot to him. Kind of a red flag. I think I saw something about it, and you know, after I'd done some research, Manny Navarro wrote about it also. Clavel was actually arrested a couple of times for domestic abuse issues with another student athlete there that he was dating, and apparently he was being a little aggressive verbally and stuff like that. And you know, he got suspended for a game or two, not really much of a penalty there. So it's kind of a red flag. Doesn't seem like he's the kind of guy to fit Miami's culture. I wonder if he was cleared of those charges. I don't want to get too much into it because I hate those kinds of things.
Yeah.
You know, there's always a lot of red tape there, and you know, players always tend to benefit as a result, and who knows what actually happened. But anyway, you know, they're giving him another chance, so you wonder whether or not he's going to be able to make the most of it. He certainly got some athleticism there. He can dunk, he can shoot from the outside, he handled the ball a lot at Colorado State, so he's probably going to get some really nice opportunity. He's going to be a guy, I think, at Summer League who's going to make a play or two where everybody's going to go, who the hell is that?
You exactly. Know?
And the fact that he's playing for Miami, for his hometown team, I think is going to give him an extra bit of charge.
It's hard. You're right. His past, his spotty past is hard to get into just because this is the first time you and I have even heard of this guy. So it's hard to start passing judgment. But it's there. And the Heat have obviously, they know about it and they're willing to give this guy a try. And so if he's got a shot at at Summer League, he's got a shot at the roster. And so at 6'4", 185 pounds, he's got good size, made almost 39% of his 7.5 three-point attempts per game last year at Colorado State. Again, Mountain West Player of the Year. That means something, I suppose. he was prolific there. I mean, 20 points a game, 6.3 rebounds, 1.7 assists. He's going to handle the ball a little bit, like you said. He's going to play some off-ball a little bit probably to take advantage of that three-point jumper. It'll be interesting to see how they use him and if he gets a significant opportunity. He's one of my favorites, at least, and we'll talk about this in a second, but to kind of show the most out at Summer League. There's a couple other of these guys that I kind of just want to breeze through, just because there's not a whole lot of information on them, and they might be like fringe guys. Lamon Murray Jr., Jake Odom.
Oh, okay. I don't want to breeze through Lamon Murray Jr.
Oh, you've got some intel.
I do not have any quote unquote intel.
He went to Pepperdine, which sounds to me like toothpaste.
I believe it's Pepperdine, and you're right. It does sound. It does sound like a
brand.
Yeah, like Occident. It's like you know, he went to Occident University or something like that. Yeah, he went to Pepperdine.
He's got a great smile.
Not a sign of plaque anywhere. 21.4 points in his last season.
Yeah.
6'5", 200 pounds. So he's got some size to him. Now, the thing about him that's most impressive was, one, his dad was a 12-year NBA veteran. Lamon Murray Sr. played for a number of teams, so he's clearly been around there. I saw some videos of him talking about his son on YouTube, and his son was around training camps. Look, you look at Seth Curry, you see other guys, you see Klay Thompson, guys that have been around that culture. It's not necessarily going to translate right away, obviously, but there's something to it. He went through it. He knows what it takes.
His dad was a three-year player at Cal. He was really good there.
Right. And he did have one skill set. Well, he does a couple things really well. He's one of the top scorers in college coming off of screens, averaging 1.07 points per game coming off of screens. And he's really good, not just from the perimeter, but also has a really, really good mid-range game. Ridiculous upside, a part of SB Nation. Actually did a nice write-up on him and everything that he does. He does have a really nice stroke. He's athletic enough. I think he's going to be the guy to watch in summer league.
I love it. I didn't want to skip over Lamon Murray Jr. You're right. That was a mistake. I did want to skip over Jake Odom, unless you've got some intel on him, too. But he spent a four-year player from Indiana State, 6'4". He graduated in 2014, played overseas, spent time in Germany.
Yeah, I actually liked this kid. I mean, he's a small guy. He's 6'4". Yeah. It's a very generous thing. He's sporting the beard. Does not look like an NBA player at all. But he's playing professionally with a Bundesliga in Germany. I mean, that's got to count for something, right? He's got a stroke, too. He's got a good three-point stroke. He seems like a good passer. He's just really small. Again, one of those guys that's probably going to make a couple highlight plays where you go, who the hell is Jake Odom? And then you'll never hear from him again. So he's a guy I'm going to keep an eye out for. I'm lucky enough to be able to see them in person, so I'm curious to see what he's able to do out there against NBA-type players.
Siobhan Shields, he's the only guy who's playing in Vegas only, He won't be where you're at in Orlando, but he played 4 years at Nebraska, 6'7", 220 pounds, he played in Italy last year, where he appeared in 18 games, averaged 10.1 points, 2.4 assists, 2.4 rebounds, in almost 29 minutes a game, good size, athletic enough, probably looks more athletic against Italians and he's going to against potential NBA players.
Yeah. Went to high school with Willie Cauley-Stein. Does that count for something?
Sure. Yeah. I love Willie Cauley-Stein. So it counts.
kind of. Sort of.
So he'll be there in Vegas. The guy I really want to talk about, I think we got through most of the wings except for...
Oh, I think I know who you're going to talk about, and I think he's also a guy that I'm curious about.
Matt Williams.
Oh, I did not know. I did not want to talk about Matt Williams.
Did we skip over another wing player?
London Ferrantes.
Oh, I want to save him. So, Matt Williams played 5 seasons at UCF.
You're right. Sorry. Crazy shooting.
I don't know if people on the podcast, our loyal listeners should know that I went to UCF. I'm pretty sure you mentioned
that. I don't think there's any reason why they would know that. I mean, you mentioned the Golden Knights once in the past year. I mean, if they caught that, good for them. I mean, what is it? Was his name Taco? What's his name?
Taco Fall.
No idea. Other than that, I don't think most people associate UCF being a real school. No offense to the current people in the podcast.
Amount of offense. What do you mean, no offense? We had Marcus Jordan, who was one of Michael Jordan's sons.
Right. Wasn't that his, fifth school in as many years?
Yeah, it was not good. We had one good year. We beat the Gators when they were ranked. And we started the year 11-0 or something crazy. We were ranked for a week and then we lost. And that was the height of UCF basketball.
You get CBS expert Chris Barnwell to talk Golden Knights. I won't have any of that in my podcast.
Chris and I had a podcast for the old site, The Friendly Bounce. And it was based on just random news bits that were happening
and restaurants that you went and restaurants that you went and ate at around Orlando.
Yeah, it ended up always just being what you used to do at UCF, which was not a great basketball podcast. We only had seven listeners a show or something like that. Anyway, Matt Williams went to UCF. Go Knights. He started at UCF. He was a 3-year four-star recruit, which was a big deal for the Knights back then and still would be. But he started when I was the year or the year before I graduated. So I used to cover for the Central Florida paper, which was called back then the Central Florida Future. I was the sports columnist, and as such, I was credentialed to basketball games. So I used to cover Matt Williams for a couple of years there, or I guess it was a year, from the sidelines, and I interviewed him and talked with him and everything when he was just a young player just starting out at UCF. Got an extra year of eligibility there. And now everything comes full circle. And he's got a spot on the Heat Summer League roster. He was he was already known as a very good three-point shooter when he was recruited to UCF, and that was his role basically immediately, was to be just like the spot-up shooter. And he started to get a little bit more responsibility the longer he was there. And this last year, he actually put together by far his best season, 15 points a game, 4.3 rebounds, 1.9 assists, played 36 minutes a game. He shot 9.1 times a game from three-point range. And
not even
30...
from three-point range. He shot from four-point range.
Yes. Half-court shots were often seen. 38.4% he converted. So he has the NBA range.
He's
at least bludgeoned it into the heads of anybody that's watched a UCF basketball game that he has the potential of NBA range. He knew exactly where his bread was buttered, is what I'm trying to say. When he got to college and in his whole career, he knew if he was going to make the NBA, he was going to do it as a three-point shooter. He's got good size, 6'5", 220. I could tell you I've stood near him. He is 6'5". Like he is
legitimate?
Yeah, whatever, 6'4" without shoes or something. But he's as legitimate as any other 6'5" NBA player. Well built. I think he's got an NBA body. He's not the most athletic guy.
Is he well built or is he not athletic? What is he?
Well, he's like muscularly built for a shooting guard, but he's not super athletic. Like he's not fast.
He didn't look
he's
very lean
take anybody.
To me. He looked like he was putting on a little extra weight, Miami's not going to stand that.
I mean, you know, UCF's got Four Rivers right around the corner. It's a great barbecue. So if you put on a little weight, I understand. But
Orlando, the barbecue place of the South. I had no idea.
But look, I wrote on allyoucanheat.com. There are shades of Wayne Ellington with Matt Williams. I mean, he's similar size, really, you know, limited in his game that's going to go to the NBA level. But if he can shoot 38% from three-point range, which is basically what Wayne Ellington shoots for his career, put a long career together. Whether or not he's Wayne Ellington or Anthony Morrow, look, those guys aren't great NBA players, but they've been in the NBA for a long time because they could do that one thing really well. James Jones, Jason Capono. I mean, guys make 8 to 12-year careers out of just being able to shoot threes consistently enough. You know, that to me is what – I don't think Matt Williams is going to come out here and be a starter or anything, but he could string along some gigs in the NBA. That's where I kind of project him.
I am really surprised. He's a local kid. He lives in Orlando. He's from Orlando. Went to school, obviously, in Orlando at UCF. I am very surprised that for a team as starred for a perimeter shooting as the Magic, he didn't sign with their summer league.
Are you?
I wouldn't
because,
be surprised.
Like, I don't even know who's calling the shots in Orlando anymore. And he's not a hybrid forward. We know from their whiteboard all they want is hybrid forwards.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess you're right. I don't know. I think
smart for the Magic. That makes way too much sense for the Magic.
I'm curious, man. I'm what's the over-under on him having at least one huge game where he just goes crazy and shoots from anywhere?
I'd bet on that.
Right? I mean, he's going to have some jaw-dropping shots somewhere along the
way. I mean, he's going to make – he does not lack confidence. He's going to take a half-court shot at some point during Summer League. He's going to – everybody on press row is going to be like, the ball is on this guy. And he will be the talk of Summer League for 5 minutes or so. And that's going to be his highlight. And look, he's one of my favorites to make the Heat's preseason roster.
Ooh.
They need three-point shooting. He's the best at it on this roster. He's got good size. I mean, if he can crash the boards a little bit, dive for some loose balls. I mean, we know that's what it's going to take for the Heat.
Yeah, can he do anything other than shoot from long range?
That's what I'm saying. He's got to hustle.
Okay.
I mean, Ronnie Magruder is not the most athletic guy either, but he hustles hard.
No, I mean, that's for sure. That's all he's got.
But
really.
Matt Williams he was the man at UCF. He's not going to be able to act like that. And I covered him, but I'm not going to pretend I know him well enough to know.
Should I mention you, though?
What? Yes, you should.
Should I ask him?
He won't remember me at all, but you should absolutely.
That's gonna kind of ruin my credibility there if I just go up to him and ask him.
All right, so don't ask him. I mean, he was a backup when I was covering him.
One more guy before we move on to Perantis, then I think that's Justin Robinson.
Yeah, so there's a couple guys who project as point guards for this roster.
Yeah,
so
that's questionable, right?
Yeah, right. I don't know who the point guards are going to be, but Justin Robinson and London Perantis. So Justin Robinson, you want to talk about him? He played at the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference, which is a thing.
Yeah.
He was a two-time player of the year of the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference.
Have you seen his highlights, though?
No.
Okay. He's 5'8".
Yes.
I'm just going to put that out there. So right away, invariably, you're going to hear comparisons. I'm sure I won't be the first reporter to mention it if I ask him about it. He's 5'8". He looks a lot like – he plays a lot like Isaiah Thomas. I mean, crazy confidence, uses screen and roll all the time, gets to the hoop and has some crazy trick shots to him. A hell of a score, 19.7 points per game. I mean, 40% on three-point attempts per game.
Seven three-pointers.
He jacks it, and he shoots it well. And I think that's – look, you look at Isaiah Thomas.
He was the Michael Jordan of the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference.
I mean, you look at Thomas's impact this past year, and you don't think a team is going to say, ah, screw it. Who cares if he's short? He's going to come in there and provide buckets? I mean, Philadelphia can't use a guy like this to come in there with their need of scoring. I mean, isn't there a team out there that can look to this guy and say, look what? He's going to get us buckets, you know? I mean, Isaiah Thomas wasn't a finished product right away. You know, he had some good games in Sacramento. Then he was stuck in that Phoenix quagmire. And then all of a sudden he's turned into an all-star with Boston. But, I mean, a guy like Robinson can't carve out a space in the NBA. I don't see why not, to be honest with you.
Well, he's 5'8".
So what? So, again, if you're willing to overlook that, I mean, Muggsy Bogues had a hell of a career.
Muggsy Bogues was like a next-level athlete, right? Like he was – Isaiah Thomas is an X-level athlete, and he's a Kyrie Irving level finisher around the rim. I mean, he'd be as good as Kyrie Irving if he was Irving's size.
This guy Robinson has some handles, and he really breaks down players' ankles, and I saw him put up a couple of layups high off the glass that reminded me a lot of Isaiah Thomas. I'll be 100% honest with you.
If he can do that, right? Then yeah. I see no reason why. The other problem is, isn't he kind of old? How old is he?
I think he's 24.
Yeah, so he's.
Oh. Is he? Yeah, I don't know. He's played there for 4 years.
Yeah,
I mean, he's doing
so. I'm not going to say Justin Robinson can't make the league, but it takes being an elite athlete and an elite finisher with elite feel to score to make it in the NBA at 5'8". I mean, look at Nate Robinson. And he was the same way. I mean, he was just unbelievable microwave skills where he was just able to just get hot and take over a game for 5 to 7 minutes at a time. And then he was completely useless after that if you left him on the floor any longer.
But, Robinson's only 22, so he's
that's good.
Not too old.
So, all right, I'm not going to get this. I'm really excited to watch Justin Robinson. He's one of my guys. I'm really excited just because he is 5'8", and if he can be the Isaiah Thomas of Summer League, that's good enough for me. And maybe it translates into something else. I think the last guy we need to talk about is London Prentice, right? Did we miss anybody else?
No, that's it.
So that's London Prentice. He's the dude with the hair at Virginia, who played at Virginia last year. If you watched any Virginia college basketball, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If not, Google it.
And the hair is purposeful, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a purpose to it. It's not just stylistic. He's generously
trying to look taller.
6'2".
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's six. He's probably 6'5" with the hair. He's probably like 6 feet underneath it. You know, it's certainly creating the illusion of height, and I think he's going to need it too. But he's a hell of a player. I mean, he looks really impressive in some of the highlights I saw. Shoots the ball really well. Really good playmaker. Really nifty passer. Good ball handles and skills. I mean, he's a guy. Honestly, I watched enough of his highlights, and again, I know they're highlights. I know it's a collegiate level. But I saw enough of him to say that he's probably the guy most likely to break out. Him or Lamon Murray, from my perspective, I think Ferrantes is the guy most likely to make an impact. And you know, I don't think Miami's necessarily looking for a point guard. Clearly, they've got some depth in the backcourt already. But if you're going to get a guy who you want to kind of develop and help bring along, I don't see why you wouldn't take a chance on someone who's an undersized. And I think here's where the Chris Quinn head coaching position kind of takes makes of an impact here. I'm sure he can probably see a little bit of himself in Ferrantes and see, look, this is a guy who's undersized, a lot flashier than Quinn ever was as a player. Maybe he's willing to take him under his wing and kind of say, look, you play the point. That's going to be your best position as an NBA player. So here's what you got to do to kind of really make this position your own. Here's how you own it, and here's how you maximize your ability so that you can turn that into a job.
Virginia played a nice ball movement centric offense. Parentes was a big part of that. I guess he was the point guard there, but everybody kind of handled the ball there. He tries really hard on both ends. I agree with your prediction. I think him, Lamon Murray, Williams probably have the best chances of making the roster, because, or at least a training camp spot and maybe a preseason spot, because this Parentes, he just looks to, he is maybe out of the most out of all these guys, the most like Heat guy, right? He just tries really hard on both ends. The Heat like guys with good hair. I mean, they do. I mean, if there has been a trend over the last few years, their hair gets in. Briante Weber, Justice Winslow, Josh Richardson sported some interesting looks. Just saying.
Justice Winslow, yeah. I mean, you're right. You're right. There have been some interesting hair cases there.
Bino Udrih. He made 43% of his 334 3-point attempts in his last 2 years. Didn't take a ton of threes in his first 2 years, probably because he wasn't playing a whole lot. But in his last 2 years, where he was playing the most, he took 334 3-pointers, which is a lot for college, and made it at a 43% clip. Now, granted, that's college. It's a shorter 3-point line than it is in the NBA. But if he can show that range in summer league.
It's the ACC. Virginia. It's a legitimate school.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. He played against legitimate competition, against some of the best guards in the country. And he plays hard on both ends. Like, he's undersized, so he's gonna get taken advantage of in the post and stuff like that. But that hasn't slowed shorter guys down who play really hard. You know what I mean? Like, he does.
Played alongside Justin Anderson, a former teammate. They saw that he still keeps in touch, so they're good friends. Rookie of the Year, the president, Malcolm Brogdon of Milwaukee. I mean, this is a guy who knows the ins and outs and how to kind of make a position for himself. Brogdon, a second round pick last year. Justin Anderson was not a lottery pick, but a guy who was a kind of a mid-first rounder there for Dallas. Mm-hmm. So I think he's got a little bit of the understanding of what it takes. And he's coming right out of college. This isn't a guy who has been stuck overseas and might have developed bad habits. He's going to be learning the good habits from probably one of the better teams as far as the development perspective is concerned. I think he's really going to make the most of this opportunity. I'm really excited to see him play. He seems like a smart guy, too. I saw him in a couple of interviews there. He knows how to handle. And again, he's got some connection to NBA level players there. So I'm curious to see how much of that makes an impact and how he kind of, you know, takes the time and makes this a great positive experience where he can hone his craft a little further.
So who's your favorite to make the roster other than Bam and O'Kara White?
I mean, I hate using the word, but Lamon Murray and the pedigree, the background, I think makes the most
that
impact.
Pepperdine
again.
Pedigree?
Yes.
Lamon
with that clean,
Murray.
Minty fresh smile. Yeah, a clean, minty, fresh smile. I think he's, again, coming off screens, it's such a big part. Although screens kind of tend to deteriorate in the fast pace of summer league, you wonder how much he's going to be able to do it. But again, he's got a nice mid-range game. I don't think Rodney, and actually Magruder did show 3-point flashes at summer league last year. So I don't know. If Murray is able to show consistent, you know, knockdown touch from perimeter, I think maybe he's a guy who can take it to that next level. You don't want to get hypnotized by Matt Williams' 30-point bombs if he has more than one or two games where he really shows off that kind of long-range, you know, specific talent. Other than that, you know, Mika, you know, he's a guy who does little things well and, again, is kind of rough and likes the physicality. I'm sure guys like Spoelstra and Juwan Howard will probably appreciate when he lays somebody out with a screen, because it's going to happen. He's going to drop an elbow in there somewhere or a shoulder and level some dude on a screen, and they're going to love that about him. I just don't know that he has the talent. I mean, to me, though, it's either Murray or Parentes. Like, I gotta.
I'm with you. I think it's I want to like Zach Irvin, but that shot is so funky.
Yeah,
it just looks like it's gonna get blocked all the time, and unless you're like Kevin Martin, I just don't see how it works.
Right.
Jean Clavel, however you say it. Yeah, he was another interesting guy, but yeah. I'm with you. Lamon Toothpaste Murray is probably my favorite.
Oh, God, can we make it a nickname, Toothpaste?
Yeah. I'm with you. You're Lamont Murray and Lyndon Parentes, and as of course I gotta support my guy from UCF, Matt Williams. I think he's got a good shot. Like I said.
Literally and figuratively.
Yes, exactly. All right. Well, that's all we have for today, whether you're listening on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening. send mailbag questions and information about, or get information about advertising on the show by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. And to support the show, make sure you download every episode and follow Locked On Heat on Twitter. And if you're not subscribed already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. Then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David. Have fun in Orlando.
I will. Have fun in Austin and let me know what Rudy Gay does.